From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's our number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, some topics to talk about.
Yes, sleeping in feels good. Is it good for you? Some interesting data that shows about sleeping and what you may want to consider when you're doing that on the weekend. And genetically modified salmon approved by the FDA. What do you think about it? What do I think about it? What does Tom think about it? What does the fish think about it? We'll talk about that and whether or not it's good, whether or not it's good for you or not.
And our recipe.
Slow cooker chicken soup. I think chicken soup is great any time of year. This time of year, it's especially good. And this is a recipe, if you like chicken soup, that you will want to have.
Sounds good to me. 800-462-7413. You ready, Zorba, for our first call?
Absolutely.
Coming up, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen.
How can we help?
Do certain foods cause you to have severe acne?
Oh, you know, that is a question that has been on every teenager's face, thought.
Let me guess.
For the
Let me
world.
Guess. Let me guess. Yes.
Maybe. That was a good guess. That was a good guess. It was maybe. Yeah. You know, that's exactly it. So wait. Why do you want to know, first of all?
I'm in my late 30s and had some recent breakout of acne.
Sure.
And it's not like the typical, you know, kids. Mm-hmm. It's just more of a hard bumps on my face. Doesn't really form into like the typical.
The typical zit. You
know, yes.
The typical zit.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering if it's attributed to certain types of foods or types of drinks, etc.
Sure. You know, well, first of all, acne, teenage acne, big issue. And food has been a big issue. And so the question used to come up certainly back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, teenage food is terrible. They eat a lot of, you know, burgers and pizza. So that must really cause you to have bad face. That's why your face is oily, because you're eating oily foods. Mm-hmm. When in fact, it's a lot more complex when we look at certainly teenage acne. And it really has to do with colonization by bacteria on your face. There is oil in the skin. But for the most part, the theory for a number of years is that food makes no difference at all, okay, so, you know, especially in the teenage part, that it really has to do with getting rid of those bacteria. And we've got a variety of things that we do, over-the-counter things, Bravoxol, which is what we use, which is benzoyl peroxide, and anti-inflammatories and Retin-A and so on. But then the promise was, once you became an adult, you wouldn't have acne. And you're a perfect example of the fact that that promise doesn't hold true. You can still get it as an adult. And for the most part, food is a very minor player, if it's a player at all. Mm. But your acne may be different than teenage acne, and it looks different to you. So where is it on your face? Is it your face or your shoulder? Where actually is it?
I would say just around the crest of my chin.
Mm-hmm.
And usually around on top of my eyebrows.
Eyebrows, too.
Red kind of hair.
Mm-hmm. Is it red? Is it more red? Is your skin red?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it doesn't form the typical pimple.
Okay, so you most likely, now first of all, in radio it's very hard to see. You can't really see the patient. However, statistically where we are, you're most likely have something that we call rosacea. It's often called acne rosacea. But rosacea is kind of the horse of a different color. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different. It's more red. It's often around the face. It's around the nose and the creases of the nose. Yeah, it can affect the nose itself. Some people can develop something called rhinophyma, where it's a severe cause of it, where the nose actually gets bigger. W.C. Fields was an actor who actually had it. Tom remembers what he looked like when we'd see those movies as a kid. But the treatment is often very similar. There is an antibiotic gel called Metrogel, Metrogel. Metrodinosol is actually the name of the chemical that's in it. But it's an antibiotic gel that you put on your face when you're bothered, twice a day, once or twice a day. That often does the trick, and then over time, some people have to use it all the time, or some people only use it for flares. That's kind of the treatment. Food will do it in that things like alcohol can cause your face to flush and become more red. Mm. But it's not the primary cause of this. And to my knowledge, we don't really know the primary cause. But I think you probably have acne rosacea. How long have you had it for, by the way?
Maybe about a year or so.
So, yeah, what I would do is call your doctor. You know, you want to get rid of it. The Metrogel is very effective. There's an antibiotic we give for more severe cases, doxycycline, orally twice a day, often for 3 to 6 months. We'll also wipe it out. But we usually reserve that for the more severe cases. If you notice certain foods bother you, then you want to stay away from them because there's certain foods that cause the flush and make it worse. But it's not the primary cause of the problem.
So. And that's including, like, the typical rumors about soda?
Right. Soda doesn't do it. It's stuff that flushes the face. As I said, alcohol is definitely one of the things that will do it. And as you may have noticed, embarrassment is another way to actually cause it to flare up and make it worse, too. But soda is not a cause. Good luck. Let us know what happens, please.
Okay.
Yep, and thank you so much for the call. 1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hello. I've been on a statin drug for about 6 or 7 years now, and I've been experiencing some leg soreness, some general muscle soreness in my leg, and I talked to my doctor. And he said, well, I can take you off the statin drug for a couple of weeks and we can see what happens. And so I have two questions. First of all, is it safe to be off the statin drug and for how long? And then what are my alternatives? I guess I have three questions because the other one, is this hereditary? I'm an active guy. I try to watch what I eat. But I was just wondering about those things with these statin drugs.
Uh-huh. So first of all, let's talk about statins. Great drugs reduce heart attacks. How do they reduce heart attacks? Well, they reduce cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, the LDL. But they have another basis that is they reduce the inflammation of the plaque. In other words, the plaque itself, the cholesterol that's in the arteries, appears to have less likely to break off and clog and rupture on a statin. Other drugs reduce cholesterol, but they don't have the same properties. Now, are all statins the same? No, they're not. Some are stronger, some are weaker. But it's not just strength and weakness. Some are more sensitive to one statin versus another. So when you do an experiment, first of all, to see if it's a statin, it might be that atorvastatin, which is Lipitor, might cause it, but simvastatin, which under the name brand Zocor, might not, or Mevacor, which is lovastatin, might not either. So often, physicians will try two or three statins to see if one does it, or if a different dose gets rid of it. So in other words, it may be a smaller dose taken less often in a different drug. I want to give you all that as an idea. Mm-hmm. The statins itself, I have special properties that work. Now, the next question. Is it hereditary? Good question. I don't know if hereditary, you know, if my dad were on a statin and I'm on a statin, if I ache, if it's because we both have it. There might be a hereditary component, but I don't know what it is. But you said you're a healthy guy, you exercise. So why are you on a statin?
Because my cholesterol was high.
How high?
I got a feeling that 200 somehow sticks in my mind. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
for overall cholesterol.
Do you have a family history of heart disease at all?
Well, my parents died young of cancer, so mm-hmm. I think they never got to the heart disease phase,
okay.
I don't think.
Okay. So this is the way to prospect it. First of all, you want to see you were put on a statin drug. Were you put on it for a good reason? Let's make an assumption the answer is yes. Then mm-hmm. you want to try different statins. You know, you haven't had a heart attack. Going off a statin for a few weeks or a few months is not going to bother you. I mean, we're talking okay. about a long-term use of it. If it was right after a heart attack or a stroke or a bypass surgery, it becomes a different issue. So I don't think you have any risk. Do you have a risk? Well, I mean, it's a tiny risk, but hey, you live in Buffalo. There's a risk of driving in the wintertime, and that's greater, you know, or getting hit by lightning or all of a sudden being stuck in a snowstorm with 20 inches of snow that come down over a 10-minute period. That's a higher risk. It's a higher risk issue. Or plowing into a snowbank. I could go on. I live in Wisconsin, so I can relate to that. So the risk is small. But I think I would try different statins. And I have patients who tolerate them for years and then they don't. And many of them, if we switch to a different statin at a lower dose, they'll tolerate it. But some of them don't, in which case they go off of it. And then they do lifestyle, no cigarettes, exercise, do that. But I think one of the questions you should know is look back and see what your cholesterol was to begin with. And then using, go up on our website. If you go to ZorbaPastor.org, we'll give you the calculator. I'll connect you to the calculator so you can put in your cholesterol numbers and see if the present recommendations say you should be on a statin. And the reason is the present recommendations are different than they were 5 years ago. And it may be you don't need to be on a statin. You probably do, but you'd want to have that information because you sound like a person who wants to have that information. So I would recommend that you put the numbers into the calculator. And we'll connect you to the calculator from the National Institute of Health.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah,
bye.
We appreciate the call. Thank you so much. 800-462-7413. So you like sleeping in? Might feel really good, but Zorba, it says here, it may be unhealthy.
Yeah, but I love sleeping in. I mean, I remember, especially as a teenager, I can remember I would stay up late and I would try to sleep in, and Mr. Krenzler, who lived next door, and he was an Orthodox Jew, so nothing happened on Saturday, but Sunday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, he was out mowing the lawn right under my window. I can remember thinking this is awful.
I can't sleep in. I could never sleep
in. So even as a kid, you couldn't sleep in?
Couldn't ever sleep in.
I can still sleep in. I can still, on Saturday, Sunday, I can sleep until 10:30 or 11 o'clock.
I think that's evil.
You think it's evil to sleep in? Well, you know, I mean, Tom, you are a Puritan. You wear the hat, the whole thing, and the pointed shoes. That's right. But this
I'm
is very
happy to hear it's unhealthy. By the way,
you're very happy to hear it's unhealthy.
Feel good.
I am unhappy to hear it's unhealthy. You know, so this was a particular study, but they looked at sleeping in and people who do this. This is a very important thing, by the way, for people who are in shift work because they have issues. So they took about 500 men and women for 7 days. They wore devices. They looked at when they were sleeping in, and they measured things. So they looked at men and women, especially they tend to sleep in on the weekend or on their days off at work. And what they looked at is they looked at their cholesterol. They looked at a number of measurements, and what they found was that when people slept in on their days off, they tended to have a lower good cholesterol. So in other words, their good cholesterol was not as good. They had a higher bad cholesterol. They had triglycerides, another risk factor that was higher. They had an increase in insulin resistance, which means that that may make them more prone to diabetes. And they tended to get fat. Well, a higher body mass index. So in other words, the people who are sleeping in were actually becoming lazy and slothful and more likely, according to this, more likely to die.
Maybe it isn't the sleeping in. Maybe it's just lack of exercise.
Well, maybe that's what it is. And but they were looking at them on the days they slept in versus the days they didn't sleep in. It's kind of interesting. But it's more complex because people who sleep in later means they're often getting less sleep in another part of their week. I don't think sleeping in is bad for you. I think the issue is people who are sleeping in may not be doing good things on the other part of their week, and maybe we're looking at that. Because you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take this study, I'm going to throw it away, and I'm going to continue to sleep in on the weekend. Thank you, science.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Back to the phones now. A Spokane, Washington listener joins in. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about insomnia. I've had insomnia for about 10 years, and I want to find out what I can do to start sleeping normally again when, A, none of the common remedies that I've done have worked. I don't want to take medication anymore. I want to be able to sleep naturally and normally.
10 years, long time.
So you would like to sleep in, but you can't sleep in.
I would love to sleep in.
So let's look at some sleep measurements. First of all, are you on any pills?
No medicine whatsoever.
Okay, and that's an important point because some medicines can keep you awake. There's certain antidepressants. Bupropion, which is Wellbutrin, being the perfect example of a drug that will sometimes keep people awake. Sudafed, over-the-counter medicines can keep you awake. Okay, coffee. How much caffeine do you drink?
You know, I don't drink coffee. I drink tea, and I do drink Diet Coke up until about noon.
Uh-huh. Okay, so from a natural point of view, for 1 month to 2 months, zero caffeine. So I would get caffeine completely out of my system for a month or two. That's what I would do, completely out of my system. That's important. We're going to talk about meds second, but we're going to talk about lifestyle first. Number three, do you drink any alcohol?
Rarely. I drink wine socially at dinners and whatnot, but it's fairly rare.
Okay. Zero alcohol for 1 to 2 months. You're going to have a boring life, let me tell you. No coffee and no alcohol.
Doesn't some alcohol make you go to sleep?
But it may disturb the sleep later on. Alcohol may put you to sleep, i.e., I'm so drunk I'm going to sleep. But it actually can disturb sleep. Now, you've looked at sleep hygiene in your room in terms of your bed, pillows, comforter, temperature. Have you ever done that?
Absolutely. I have done.
I mean, after 10 years. Now, let's assume nothing is working. You've tried over-the-counter medications like Benadryl. That has failed, right?
Well, actually, right at the present time, after I got off of Ambien, I went to my doctor and I said, you know, I just don't want to take medication. And she said, well, if you can't sleep, go get Unisom. So I went off of Ambien, and of course, I did not sleep. And so I have been taking Unisom for about a year.
How's it working?
It works. I mean, it takes a long time to work. My problem is I never get sleepy anymore. I don't get drowsy. I don't ever.
What time do you put your head on the pillow, usually?
I try to be in bed by 10.
Okay.
And I usually try to take it by 8 p.m.
Okay. So you take it a couple hours beforehand. You take one pill or two pills?
One and a half.
How did you get to one and a half?
Well, I asked my doctor. I said, it's just not quite there. She said, try one and a half.
Oh, I say, yeah.
That seems to work.
So first of all, let me tell you about, you may not want to take pills, but let's talk about antihistamines. For a lot of people, they work, and they're safe, they're effective. There's a disagreement. Some doctors say, no, 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 they have side effects of this or that, but a lot of people, they tolerate it. In the elderly, it's a problem because of side effects, falling, and the other aspects of antihistamines. So if you're over the age of 65 or 70, elderly, by the way, is always 25 years older than you are today. I just wanted to find that to you. That's my definition of elderly, which puts that in my idea closer to about
there are fewer and fewer elderly people around.
Certainly in the 90s, those are the elderly guys and girls. But anyway, that's one thing. Have you ever tried gabapentin?
No, I have never heard of that.
Gabapentin is a great drug. I use it all the time. It's an anti-seizure medicine that we use for chronic pain, and it's one of my go-to drugs for sleep. I find it highly effective. It is not habit-forming like Ambien can be. It's a very effective drug, 300 milligrams to 600 milligrams at bedtime. I have a lot of people who take it, and they sleep through the alarm. And that's and often sounds wonderful. See, that's what we do on the show. We want to give people joy and happiness. You know, that's exactly it. So I'd ask your doctor to try gabapentin and see if that works. It's my go-to, but I would do the natural first and that second, and make sure that you at least wake up enough to listen to our show.
Perfect.
Thanks for
I
your
can
call.
Do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. And before we take a break, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Today's quibble comes to us from Nomi, who listens to the show on WBAA in Lafayette, Indiana. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I've heard you refer a few times to hearing a voice sound garrulous when you mean it sounds shaky, but garrulous means talkative. I'm afraid the word you think you want is querulous, though that really means whiny or complaining, not shaky. Quavery might serve you better. Thanks for such an entertaining, enlightening show."
I appreciate that. I'll try to use the right word correctly, but that's it. No, I don't mean whiny at all. That's exactly it. You know, the thing about the Grammar Police is they're always one step ahead of me when it comes to English.
Very helpful, aren't they? Are you querulous? Join the ever-growing Grammar Police force and send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a nice recipe, really good recipe coming up. That's next. More of your calls, of course. We'll be quack, quack, quacking with Dr. Zorba, too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next call, slow cooker chicken soup.
That's right. Do you like chicken soup?
I do.
I like chicken soup.
I haven't had it in forever, but
really?
I do like it.
Oh, I love chicken soup. I make it a lot. I like it. I just like chicken soup, and and this is one of the chicken soup recipes. And I'm going to give some variation on this too. But it's one of my kind of my go-to dish for comfort.
Oh yeah, it is good.
You know,
comfort.
It's a comfort yeah. type dish.
Absolutely.
Making chicken
yeah.
soup.
Yeah.
You know, and my mother used to make chicken soup, but hers was awful. It was just terrible.
Well,
she'd have all the grease on the surface, and she wouldn't take off the grease.
My mother used to do it by cutting the top
cutting
off the can.
That's right. Pouring it in,
yeah.
And there's always the Campbell's variation with the noodles in there. Although
yeah.
I liked
oh,
it as
yeah.
a kid. That's all right. That's okay. Reminds me of elementary school. Oh,
yeah.
You know, soup's on. So, and slow cookers are good, especially for people who are working, but slow
yeah.
cookers are kind
yeah.
of good, you know, any time of the year. Okay. Start out with 8 cups of water.
8 cups of water.
And regular water. I don't think I would go use fancy water. I wouldn't go take a gallon of, like, special crystal clear water from the high mountain water. I'd use water from the sink.
Okay.
Okay. That's right. Now, 4 medium carrots peeled cuts into a large dice.
Four medium carrots peeled and cut into
yeah.
large
Do you
dice.
Like cooked carrots? I happen to like cooked carrots a lot.
Yeah, I like cooked
yeah, I like
carrots.
Cooked carrots.
Yeah.
Do you like cooked peas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like canned peas?
Not as much. No,
good. Well,
I know
not,
you hate canned peas.
I hate them. We're not going to use them in the recipe.
Right.
That's right. I hate canned peas. I've wanted to try canned peas for the last few years, but I can't bring myself to actually buy them in the store. I look at them, but I don't buy them.
Frozen.
Frozen are fine. 3 medium celery stalks, cut large dice, of course.
3 medium celery stalks.
A medium onion, small dice.
A medium onion, small dice.
Yeah. And by the way, before at the very end, I'm going to give some variations on this that I like.
Okay.
A bay leaf.
A bay leaf.
Tablespoonful of kosher salt.
A big tea kosher salt.
That's right, a tablespoon kosher salt. A half teaspoon of fresh ground black pepper.
A half a little tea, freshly ground black pepper.
Half teaspoon of thyme, dried thyme.
A half a little tea, dried thyme.
Why is there an H-Y in thyme? Why is it T-H-Y-M-E? Why don't we pronounce
it thyme?
Why
are there
thyme?
A gazillion words in the English language that don't that, sound like
they're yes, they don't sound like
yeah,
they're spelled at all. You know,
yeah.
you've got silent letters,
yeah.
and then you've got silent sounds. You know, my daughter-in-law is Brazilian, and we'll pronounce, I can't remember the word that we're pronouncing, and there was like, it's an O in there, and it's we pronounce it ow, and she said, but there's not a U. I said, oh, yeah, you know, that's, you know, they're silent sounds. It's
yeah.
It's English.
Getting
it's
back
a terrible
to the recipe.
Language. Oh, sorry. Chicken. Take a whole chicken. Neck and giblets removed from the plop it into the slow cooker. But you can. You can take the whole chicken, just whole.
Okay. A whole chicken, neck and giblets removed from the cavity.
So now I'm going to give you a slow cooker story. I've had a slow cooker that since when I had it in college, and it broke. And my father, before he died 18 years ago, gave me his slow cooker, which I never liked the look of. It was round and it was circular.
Who cares what
it
looks
worked.
Like?
That's what I thought for a lot of years. And then last year I thought, you know what? I'm sick of the way this slow cooker looks. It still works, but I decided I would share it with someone by bringing it to, you know, Goodwill.
Yeah.
And I would buy a new slow cooker.
Sure.
They're not expensive.
Yeah, very nice.
They're not. They're very nice. And I bought one which was an oval shaped, and you know what? It would fit this chicken. The old slow cooker, which was round
oh,
and kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
looked dinky, it had flowers and stuff. It wasn't a man's slow cooker. It was a woman's slow cooker. And you got to get an oval slow cooker, otherwise you got to chop up the chicken. Right? You got to be, you know, so if you can't, you may have to chop up this chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, just plop the chicken in. Tablespoonful of olive oil.
Big T olive oil.
And 2 tablespoonfuls of coarsely chopped Italian parsley leaves.
2 big T coarsely chopped parsley leaves.
That's right, parsley leaves. Yeah. You got it here. Okay, so place the water, carrots, celery, onion, bay leaf, and everything in a 6-quart or larger slow cooker. Stir to combine, set it aside. Now, if you want a variation, by the way, before we go further, you can go to the store and often buy root vegetables, and they'll have turnips in there and parsnips. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will take the turnips and parsnips, one or both, and I will chop them up and put them in here. So it's very important. And the turnips make it sweeter.
Oh.
It's very interesting. You wouldn't think that a sweeter chicken soup, but it adds a very nice robust
texture. It sounds kind of good to me, actually.
It's very good. So turnips you might put in here also, same way. Place the salt, the pepper, and the thyme, which you might pronounce as thyme if you're not a native speaker, set it aside. Place the chicken on a work surface or cutting board, pat it dry, towel it, get rid of the fat if you want to, drizzle the oil on it, chop it up, put it in with the vegetables. Or you might be lazy and just plop the whole thing in there. It'll work just as well. And cook it for 6 to 8 hours. That's mm-hmm. all you have to do. And the chicken, if you cook it whole, kind of falls off the bone. And for me, I like the taste of it.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Then, if you want to, you can just eat the chicken that way, or you can transfer it to a rim baking sheet, warm it up, and shred the chicken. But frankly, I would just put the chicken on a plate or on a chopping board. I would serve the soup in and of itself, and I would have the chicken on the side, and you might like that. And bon appetit.
You've got a very interesting. You could do this without the slow cooker if you wanted to.
You could, but the slow cooker is the lazy person's way to cook. And I know, Tom, there are times that you often will take a shortcut in the kitchen when it's your time to cook, right?
My shortcut, by the way, is get in the car and head for the restaurant.
That's right. That's your shortcut to the chicken. So if you don't want to head to the restaurant like Tom, you can go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. You can see pictures of Tom, of me. You can find this recipe and other recipes.
Pictures of me getting in the car.
You're in the car. We've got to put that up. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook. And from time to time, I tweet.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Burnett, Texas. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
So I have a frequent problem. I've kind of helped alleviate it recently. I'm studying to be a personal trainer, and it had some information in it, but it's still occurring. I get lower back pain where it almost feels like my sacrum is what's hurting, and it will frequently be what wakes me up sometimes 2 times a night, and I can't get back to sleep unless I try and stretch it real quick.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if you have any advice.
Oh, sure. Sure, I do. Low back pain is a big issue. So you're training to be a personal trainer? Is that it? Or you're a personal trainer? What do you do for a living right now?
I'm actually a truck driver right now, and I'm studying ACE fitness materials to do the personal trainer certification.
Okay, so right now you're sitting in your truck for long hours. That's a very important thing because that adds to low back pain. Do you notice when you do certain exercises, it makes it better or worse? Is there an exercise component to this, you think, one way or another?
I actually didn't notice that, but again, studying the book, I kind of realized it taught me that I was doing a lot of squats with weight, and that actually exercises your lower back a lot.
Right. That can absolutely be part of it. So it wakes you up at night. Where is it in your back? Is it in the pelvis? Is it in the sacroiliac joint? If you're a trainer, I'm sure you've kind of looked at these things. Is it on the tailbone? Where do you experience the pain?
It's not in the tailbone. It's a little bit higher than that.
Okay.
It's like almost right where the last vertebrae touches the top of your pelvis on the back side.
Sure. On the days that you drive, is it worse or better?
It doesn't bother me at first, and then it will start to bother me, and sometimes I'll have to pull over and I have to stretch it real quick.
Sure. Okay, I have a couple suggestions. First of all, let's talk about the non-exercise suggestions. Sitting down for a long time is always bad for the back. I mean, it's just we're not made to sit down. So whether we sit in front of a computer, in a truck, driving a car, or we're just lazy and sitting in front of the TV, all of that can affect and worsen low back pain. One of the ways that you can actually loosen the muscles in the back is by often putting a pillow under the thigh when you're sitting in the seat so that your leg is slightly raised, you know, so you're a little bit higher. So I don't mean under your, I just mean under the thigh, so you're kind of on an angle. You follow me?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, not underneath your butt. And that will often relax the low back, and that is a very important issue for truck drivers. That is a major step because you've got a sedentary job. That's number one. Number two, in terms of your job, you've got to do stretches before you get in the rig in the morning or in the evening. And when you get out, when you take a break, which you have to try to do every couple of hours, what you've got to do is spend 5 minutes or so doing some stretches for your low back, sacroiliac stretches. And we'll put some of these on the website. We'll do a connector to YouTube to show you. You know, I'll look it up. We'll put it on zorbapastor.org, and we'll do a connector for some low back exercises specific to you. That's the second thing. The next thing you want to look at is from an exercise point of view, are there certain exercises that are making it worse? And you can't always tell. But sometimes people do stretches that are actually not good. Not all yoga stretches, for instance, are good for all people. They're good for people who have really lax joints. You know, they can put their legs in back of them and they can touch the floor. But, you know, and they're the people that go, yoga is wonderful. It makes me fly. But they have lax joints and so they can do it. For other people like myself who have very tight hamstrings, there's some yoga stretches that hurt me and others that make it better. So you want to then discover that by experimentation. That's kind of what I would do. I'd look at your job, which means relaxing that low back with a pillow, and I would make sure I did stretches in the morning, and when I stopped every 2 hours or so for 5 minutes, I'd do other stretches. And number three, when I exercise, I try to see if there's something I'm doing that's bad. But I think a lot of it is due to what's going on in the rig and the truck. That's my guess.
Okay. That sounds good.
Great. Good luck on your training. I hope it works out for you. It's a wonderful position to be in to be a trainer. You do a lot of good for people. Yeah.
Thanks so much for the call at 800-462-7413. Now, before the break, Zorba, let's take a dive into the murky waters of medical quackery. It's time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up.
Okay, Zorba, this time we're really taking a dive into murky waters.
Yes, we are.
Tell us about Cure OC and Zola, the Wonder Water.
That's right, the Wonder Water, absolute Wonder Water. You know, there's it was touted as a never-ending source of radiant energy. In other words, you would take this, you would have radiant energy, absolutely the case. And it was even Sears Roebuck carried it, and at one point they carried it in a pint. If we look at what this was a 1920s cure. A pint in today's dollars would cost $25 in 2000. You know, in today's dollars, a pint of this stuff, that's what it would cost, and it was seawater.
What was Wonder Water?
The Wonder Water was, it was a gallon of water from the Pacific Ocean or a pint of water from the Pacific Ocean, and you would take...
With the salt removed.
Not with the salt removed. No, you were taking salt water. It was the source of radiant energy. They were just taking salt water, putting it in a bottle, and selling it to you and calling it Cure-OC, a natural source of radiant energy. In other words, the idea was, what could happen? I mean, the salt... Think about it. The ocean is bathed in the sun, and if you drink the seawater, you will be bathed in the sun, and you will have
goodness.
More energy.
Well, that's actually not healthy to drink seawater.
Well, if you take too much of it. But, I mean, the idea was you'll take a few teaspoons in the morning. You only pay $25 for a pint of this stuff, and you would have a little bit of sea. And the feds went in, and they said it was going to be a false statement. But then, just like a lot of supplement companies rather do today, they took the false statement and they made it into something a little more palatable. Radiant energy. They didn't say it would cure cancer, cure diabetes. They just said it would be radiant energy. And as I said, Sears Roebuck got into it the same way. And now let me tell you a little bit more. Zola, the Wonder Water, to save shipping costs, they dehydrated it. So in other words, instead of sending you the ocean, what they did was they dehydrated it, and they sent you the salt, and you would rehydrate it. You would rehydrate it, and you can make 25 to 40 gallons. And once again, they only charge you, in today's dollars, $25 to $30 to be able to rehydrate this, and you would put it in water and take it off.
Seawater with no water.
That's seawater without water. The ultimate quackery that you can have. You know, there's no end to this stuff. No end at all.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this new segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. Or remember, you can always post it on Facebook.
We have some interesting research that'll come up next. More of your calls, of course. And we'll check out another email, too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Back to the phones we go after a bit, but first, Zorba, genetically modified salmon, the FDA has ruled.
Right. The FDA has ruled that it is okay to have genetically modified salmon, but not only that, it is not okay to label it as genetically modified salmon.
Do they have a reason here?
Well, they have a reason because they're the FDA and they have the power. That's sort of the reason.
Now, well, obviously, they've decided there's nothing wrong with genetics.
Well, that's what they've done is they've made a statement about this that concerns a lot of things. So if you remember, years ago, there was bovine growth hormone, BGH.
Well, I remember that. And a huge brouhaha.
And it turned out that when you analyze milk, you can't find a difference in the milk, but there is a difference in the cow because some are using it. And the FDA ruled at that time you cannot label milk that way. However, a store can say our milk is BGH free. In other words, they can say, and then you are trusting the store, right?
Yeah.
And the store might say, and a number of stores have said, we're not going to take genetically modified salmon. You know, but on the other hand, you've got to trust them with that, and that's the issue.
Yeah,
and
there's no penalty if somebody finds out that the BGH is actually in the milk.
No, no, there's no penalty, but you can't necessarily even discover that. I mean, that's part of the issue. And part of the issue with these genetically modified foods is, are they Frankenfoods? That's kind of the slang term. Now, there's a lot of brouhaha. We've used, humans have used genetically modified foods for years, and it's called hybridization. But hybridization is a natural process where you take two different forms, make them together to a better variety, a bigger apple, a bigger grapefruit, and so on. This is kind of different because it's been modified by science and people are concerned about it.
I don't eat a lot of salmon. My wife loves salmon, but she will not eat farm salmon. Is this, can they genetically modify Pacific salmon?
Well, this is going to be farm-raised salmon. And part of the fear is that the salmon will then, which is genetically modified, is then going to get into the live salmon stream, you know, where it's wild salmon, and all of a sudden infect. This is the fear. I'm using the word infect as a bad word, but it's going to end up changing and modifying the salmon in the wild, and all of a sudden we're left out in the cold if we think this salmon is bad for us.
They can say Alaska salmon.
They can say Alaska salmon because they caught it in Alaska, but they can't say Alaska salmon if they caught it in Nova Scotia. So they can say where it's caught, and they can say farm-raised. Farm-raised is something that they can say. But the real issue is whether or not this is bad for you or not. Now, this particular salmon has been looked at by the FDA. They have tried for years and years. There are certain advantages from a farm-raising point of view, but I think the consumer should know about it and make their own decision.
800-462-7413 is the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener in Ocala, Florida. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I'd like to get confirmation of a theory that I have regarding headaches that I used to get frequently. And it took years to for me to associate the fact that I had an amount of alcohol. It could have been a martini. It could have been one beer. And then dessert with semi-sweet chocolate, particularly. And I would get a raging headache in the middle of the night that would last me into the next day. And I started, all of a sudden it dawned on me that, well, it was maybe the combination of the two, because I didn't have a lot of alcohol. I didn't have a lot of the chocolate. But with the two of them together, perhaps the alcohol exacerbated the effect of the chocolate. But I've experimented with it over the years, and I've talked to people. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. They think I'm crazy. But I've experimented, and I'll have one beer before dinner and then some chocolate cake for dessert, and I'll get a headache.
Yeah,
I mean, it just happens.
I think they're definitely connected. I have a question for you. Are you a chocoholic? Is chocolate one of the four food groups in your mind? Is that part of it? I mean,
it might be one of the three food groups. I don't know, but I pretty much have it under control. I do like chocolate, so I will now eat chocolate if I think that. That I'm going out for dinner or something and I'm going to have a beer or maybe two beers maximum, I will not eat chocolate past noon of that day.
Really? And so that's how sensitive you are. In other words, you have to limit your chocolate even before you go out or you'll get a headache from drinking the beer.
Oh, yes. If I had a chocolate in the mid-afternoon and then at dinner I had a beer, I would get a headache.
Yeah, what kind of chocolate do you have?
Basically all kinds, but it does seem like the milk chocolate or the kind of chocolate that you get in chocolate ice cream is a little less potent.
But it doesn't have to be chocolate with nuts. It's not chocolate nuts that you're having all the time.
No, the nuts don't seem to be a problem.
Okay, so it's not a nut issue. It's a chocolate issue. Well, chocolate is, like you said, it's theobromine. It has chemicals in it that are actually related to medications that we often used to use, theophylline and aminophylline, for people with asthma and heart failure. And it can have some side effects for people. Some people get headaches from alcohol, migraine headaches from alcohol. Yours sounds like it certainly could be a migraine. Making an assumption that it's probably a migraine, you have discovered that you know, migraineurs, and I'm a migraineur, I get migraines periodically, and certain foods used to bring on my migraines. Not chocolate and not alcohol. I'm not a chocolate-holic. Nor am I an alcoholic, but I have been known to have a beer or a glass of wine and chocolate cake. Doesn't cause it for me. You are correct. It's probably bringing on your migraines, and you just have to stay away from that combination. And for many people, nuts will do it. Red wine might do it, and white wine doesn't do it. Certain beers will do it. You know, if there are more hops in the beer, they can do it. Alcohol. These are sensitizers, and we don't really quite understand why they work. But I guess what you'll have to do if you have a drink is start going and eating apple pie with ice cream instead.
Yes. I have experimented with different forms of alcohol because you mentioned hops, and I prefer a IPA, a hoppy kind of a beer.
Has that made any difference at all?
Maybe it's the hops. And so I would substitute having 1 ounce of gin instead of a beer and the chocolate, and same thing. So it's pretty much got to be the alcohol.
I have a question for you. What did you do? You're 75. Are you still working? Or if not, what did you do for a living?
Well, I was primarily in research and rocket science.
In research. Yeah. In research. Because you have done the research. When you said, I took 1 ounce, 1 ounce of spirits and tested it, I thought, this is a research person. You have done your due diligence when it comes to research.
And he knows that this isn't rocket science.
Yeah, that's right. It's not rocket science. That's exactly it. So, well, thanks so much. And thanks for the research that you did. And you are correct. You have proven your theory that alcohol and chocolate chocolate gives you migraines.
Yeah, thanks a million for the call. You didn't just say that you have a beer with your chocolate cake.
No, I don't know, but I was just sort of saying, you know, you go out to a restaurant, you have a beer. I don't finish my beer sometimes. I'm eating the chocolate cake. I might have them in the, might have them together. But I don't order a beer with dessert. That's not what I do.
Before the next call, Zorba, how about we let one of our listeners give us a piece of his mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's disagreement is from a listener named Brett. He writes, "Hi, Zorba and Tom. On a recent show, you told a caller that Truvia was plant-based and was possibly the better artificial sweetener. Stevia is actually the best sweetener and is truly natural, coming from the dried and ground stevia plant. Truvia has some stevia in it, but is mixed with chemicals in a laboratory. It may come from something natural, but it's not natural anymore. Splenda is a chemical concoction just like Truvia."
Well, Splenda is totally different from Truvia and Stevia, because Splenda is, it's a different chemical concoction. It is a completely artificial thing. But that's very interesting. Stevia is the natural plant substitute, and Truvia, which tends to be, is a name brand, and I did not realize, may have artificial things within it. This is very important for people who are trying to sweeten stuff and try to not have the calories. Mm-hmm. And my recommendation for this is that if you want something sweet, first of all, get rid of the sweetened beverages. Forget that. You know, if you're going to, you know, don't drink your calories. If you want something sweet, have something natural such as an orange or a piece of grape or a piece of fruit. But if you're going to try to limit your calories, you can just see this perfect example. Truvia has stevia in it, and I, as the consumer, didn't even think about the fact that it may be a more artificial than the stevia, which is the main component in it. So, consumer, you decide what you want to have. If you want to have pure stevia, that's what you should purchase at the store.
Do you disagree with something Zorba said? Don't sugarcoat it. Let us have it. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener in Oshkosh, Wisconsin joins in. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I have a question for the doctor. I am interested in knowing a little bit more about anti-inflammatory diets or lifestyles. I've done a little bit of research. Dr. Wheel's anti-inflammatory food pyramid, for example, Dr. Furman's Nutritarian pyramid, and they all seem to have a lot of similarities. They're primarily plant-based, with the exception of fish. But do they really have an effect on anti-inflammatory? Do they have an anti-inflammatory effect on the body? And I ask this because my husband is struggling with polymyalgia rheumatica and a little bit of arthritis. And, you know, it is not just a diet. It's a lifestyle change. And if I'm going to do this, I want to know, you know, a good salad.
So PMR, polymyalgia rheumatica, we don't know what causes it. We treat it with steroids for a while. Is he on steroids right now?
He was, but he's now tapered off.
Good, good. The real question is, will diet make a difference? Now, and it's interesting because Andrew Weil and Furman have done a very good job, sold a lot of books, and basically have done a lot of lectures about the fact that diet can actually reduce inflammation. And there's no stable, reliable, scientific evidence measurable that you can say that these diets do anything. Now, when I say that, let's talk about the SED rate. SED rate is a measurement of inflammation. It's one of the measurements that we use. So the SED rate is often elevated in people with PMR that your husband had, and it may be 45 or 50. It can be as high as 70 or 80, but it's a number that we look at. Now, if an anti-inflammatory diet really made a difference, then we would expect the SED rate with somebody on the diet to go down to the normal of 10 to 15, we'll say. And there's no evidence it does that. In other words, you go to the diet and the SED rate doesn't come down. So you know, there's no evidence based on inflammation. Okay. So the problem with this is that a lot of And I'm not against the diet. The diet may make your husband feel better because we know plant-based diets are better. We know we eat too much, you know, too many animal products, and we know fish is good. So the diet may actually make him more comfortable and feel better. So you could try that. But the diet is sold under the cloak of science, anti-inflammatory. Inflammation is a modern word. It's a scientific word, and it has scientific meaning. So if you're going to use that scientific word that it's an anti-inflammatory diet, show me the beef. In other words, I want to see something. I want to see a change in the blood test. I want to see a change in inflammation where we measure it by biopsy. If not, don't use this word. It's pseudoscience. It's junk. The diet may be good, but calling it anti-inflammatory sells the book.
Gotcha.
I hope that helped.
That helps. We may still follow the diet.
Exactly.
Because it is, you know, fairly healthy, and we're very close to that.
Yeah, and see if the diet works. The diet may be just side, but don't swallow the junk, you know, the quackery to say that it's anti-inflammatory unless you can show me that it's actually anti-inflammatory in a scientific study, more than one study that has been reproduced, that's in a good journal, that's peer-reviewed and done properly. If not, anti-inflammatory is done to sell the book or the product.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thank you so much. And before we head out today, Zorba, we don't mind taking our lumps from the grammar police or debating the issues during our Disagreeing with a Doc segment. But now and then, it's just nice to hear that we're doing a good job. The following email comes to us from Shannon of Spokane, Washington. Dear Dr. Zorba, a few weeks ago, I had the privilege of speaking with you on the phone about my burning lips, which have been a recurring problem at least 4 years. You suggested 5 things to try, 4 of which I have tried, and 1 that I was doubtful would work. That last one, changing my toothpaste, sounded like an unlikely cure since I've been using a natural toothpaste for years. That day, I noticed something on my tube of toothpaste that I hadn't before. The label said, contains papain, a common allergen. I couldn't believe it. So I have been using Sensodyne for a week now, and my lips are feeling so much better. Thank you.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very nice. Oh, I love it. It's a good example of natural sold the toothpaste, and papain, which is a natural component, still produced a problem. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Has Zorba helped you? Share your story with us. Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrum. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1212Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.